Working remotely, where you are shouldn't dictate what you do. Work from the road by turning your vehicle into a reliable high-speed data Wi-Fi hotspot with AT&T in-car Wi-Fi. On the network that covers more roads than any other carrier, take your work on the road and AT&T will be there to keep you connected. Connect up to 10 devices and stream conference calls, finish up that presentation, or answer last-minute emails. Why wait? Go to att.com/in-car Wi-Fi today for free trial eligibility. Based on independent third-party data, number of devices varies by manufacturer. Always pay careful attention to the road and don't drive distracted. Wi-Fi hotspot intended for passenger use only when vehicle is in operation. Compatible device and vehicle required.
From BBC Radio 4, Britain's biggest paranormal podcast is going on a road trip.
I thought in that moment, oh my God, we've summoned something from this board.
This is Uncanny USA.
He says, somebody's in the house, and I screamed.
Listen to Uncanny USA wherever you get your BBC podcasts, if you dare.
When you think about the future, what kind of technology do you envision? Whatever the future holds, artificial intelligence will undoubtedly be at the heart of it all. Join Graham Class as he hosts Season 2 of Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast, and hear from the minds transforming healthcare, retail, entertainment, personal computing, and more with the help of AI. Tune in every other Tuesday and explore the latest technology that's changing our world today and creating a more accessible tomorrow. Listen to Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
What's up, this your boy Lil Duval, and check out my podcast, Conversations with Unc, on the Black Effect Podcast Network. Each and every Tuesday, Conversations with Unc podcast feature casuals and in-depth talk about ebbs and flows of life and the pursuit of happiness. Unlike my work on stage, I tap into a more serious and sensitive side to give life advice and simply offer words of encouragement, yet remind folks to never forget to laugh. Every Tuesday, listen to Conversations with Unc, hosted by Lil Duval on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Presented by AT&T. Connecting changes everything.
Brought to you by the reinvented 2012 Camry. It's ready. Are you?
Get in touch with technology with Tech Stuff from HowStuffWorks.com.
Hello again, everyone, and welcome to Tech Stuff. My name is Chris Paulette, and I am an editor here at HowStuffWorks.com. Sitting across from me, as he always does, is senior writer Jonathan Strickland.
Happy 200th episode, Chris.
Why, thank you, Jonathan. Happy 200th episode to you, too.
And they said that after 100 episodes, it was too much already. But we kept going.
Yes, we did. And so today we're going to present our 200th episode spectacular.
Yeah. Now, if you remember on our 100th episode spectacular, we decided to do something that would require us to do absolutely no research whatsoever. We talked about our favorite technology.
Yes.
Which was easy, right? We were like, hey, this is great. I don't have to look anything up. I just think, what kind of stuff do I like to play with? Well, we decided for the 200th episode, we'd go the opposite direction. We wanted something that would require lots and lots of research. So we've decided to talk about some of the biggest innovations and inventions over the last 200 years. Because why did we do the 200th episode? I get the connection, but I'm just wondering why we decided to go with the whole let's research stuff.
Yeah, and I don't know.
Yeah,
but
in retrospect, it seems like a silly. It's Ariel's fault.
Oh yes,
it was my friend Ariel who suggested that.
Thanks a lot.
Thanks, Ariel.
Thanks so much. Okay, well, we should point out though that we've just made a list of all the different technologies we thought were important, and there are tons and tons and tons of important technologies. And as the case is
with science and engineering, one person builds on the work of someone else. So we sort of picked highlights here and there that we thought were important. We're probably going to leave out one or two of your favorites, in which case feel free to write in and let us know what they are. But we're going to touch on some of the ones that we thought were important. Maybe call out some points on a few of the most important ones, but definitely, you know, pick some of our favorites over the last couple hundred years.
So. Yeah, what's a couple of centuries between friends?
I actually started at 1800, but I don't really have anything between 1800 and 1810 anyway, so I guess that's all right.
So yeah, let's just go straight to 1814, shall we?
That sounds good.
Okay, so in 1814, and a man who had been working in coal mines pretty much his whole life, George Stephenson, built the first successful steam locomotive. Now, we're including this on here because, of course, steam locomotives ended up changing the face of much of the world.
Yes.
It allowed for shipping on a scale and a speed that up to that point had never been seen before. So it was definitely a revolutionary development. Now, the first train was called Blücher.
Blücher?
And that was a young Frankenstein reference, which is why Chris doesn't get it. But Blücher was, it pulled several cars of coal that weighed several tons up a hill at a maximum speed of a blistering 4 miles per hour.
Wow.
But, you know, this is the first time that they've been able to, that anyone had been able to create a steam-driven locomotive and that didn't explode or, you know, that actually worked. There had been some steam engines before that point, but this was the first one as use of in a locomotive. So that was my first choice. Also in 1814, we had the first use of the camera obscura.
Actually, no, not exactly.
No?
The camera obscura had been around for quite some time before that.
Well, that's true.
But it was around that time that Joseph Nicéphore Niépce.
Nice try.
No, actually, I went to, by the way, Forvo.com. If you're looking for, no, seriously, Forvo.com has, if you're looking for difficult to pronounce words or a lot of cases, names, foreign names, they have a service where you can contribute your pronunciation. I should hurry this up because it's not on topic, but very nice. So Joseph Nicéphore Niépce, or Nicéphore Niépce.
Okay.
He was an inventor and he made the first permanent photographic image.
Uh-huh.
So he was the first person to actually print out a photo.
Gotcha.
He had difficulty with, he and his brother Claude, they actually had an internal combustion engine. I found out in doing this and poking around on Britannica. We're going to get to that in a minute.
Yeah.
But he ended up partnering with Louis-Jacques Mandé Daguerre, whom you might know from the daguerreotype. And they refined the practice of putting photos on paper and really making modern photography more possible. Because before, I mean, you had the camera obscura, but it really wasn't able to make a print of an image.
Right.
And now you could take a photo and print it out, although it was a much more arduous and painful process than it is now.
Right, because now what I do is I push a button and then it's digital, and then I press another button and then it prints.
Yep.
But I don't print because I just put them in my Facebook.
Okay.
Okay. So in 1825, we're skipping ahead a little bit.
Yep. Oh, yeah. We're gonna jump around a little bit. It's not going to be year by year.
Right.
That
would
take forever.
Because, of course, those
200 years or so.
The last 200 years happened to be during the Industrial Revolution. So it turns out there's quite a few things that were invented at that time. Like we said, we've tried to concentrate on things that we thought really changed the world. So not just something that was cool or interesting, but something that really did revolutionize the way we do things.
I don't want to change the world. I'm not looking for New England.
So in 1825, William Sturgeon invents the electromagnet. Now, this was actually the culmination of several observations that ended with the electromagnet. So back in 1820, Hans Christian Ørsted discovered that a wire carrying a current generated by a magnetic field, or rather a wire that carries a current could generate a magnetic field. Okay, so we've talked about this before. You know, electricity moves through a wire, and then you get a magnetic field because there's this interesting relationship between magnetism and electricity. Then you have André-Marie Ampère, who found that a helix of wire also carrying a current would create a magnetic field. And you had Dominique François-Jean Arago, He found that you could magnetize an iron bar. If you wrapped this coil of wire around it, ran the current through, it creates the magnetic field. You could actually magnetize an iron bar, take the iron bar out, and it's a magnet. That leads us to Sturgeon, who discovered that if you kept the bar in there, if you did not remove the bar, it actually created a much stronger magnetic field. Mm-hmm. He bent that bar into a U shape, and then you think of like the base of the U is embedded in some sort of foundation. There's a coil of wire around each end. You've got two poles. Well, the two poles are close to each other, and that generated a particularly strong magnetic field. This was essentially the first real electromagnet, which ended up being really, really important in electronics later on.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
In fact, a lot of the developments that we're going to talk about shortly were based upon the electromagnet. Without it, they don't work.
Right. That's true. That's true.
So,
1829, the typewriter?
Yep. W.A. Burt.
Yep. And this might be a good plug again for our podcast on the keyboard, the QWERTY keyboard, and why it got popular, and the Dvorak keyboard. This we're not talking like the IBM Selectric here. We're talking about the manual mechanical typewriter.
Right, right.
And then you wanted to talk about in 1831, the electric dynamo and motor with Michael Faraday.
Yes. Okay, so this is another really important discovery. It's not so much an invention as a discovery. So we just started talking about the electromagnet, where you create the magnetic field by running the current through the wire. Well, Faraday found out that the opposite was also true. If you subjected a coiled or if you subjected wire to a magnetic field, it would induce electricity to flow through the wire.
Mm-hmm.
So this induction became the basis of things like electric motors, generators, and transformers. So that became extremely important later on. So you notice that a lot of these developments are happening pretty close to each other, like a decade or so within each other.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's where we really saw the rapid development of technology take off. Once we got a real firm understanding of things like electromagnetism, it really made lots of really cool developments possible.
And that kind of goes back to my point earlier about how these different engineers and scientists were working off of each other's discoveries. I mean, Faraday was obviously interested in electromagnetism and then, you know, moved on from there.
Right.
So it's really kind of interesting to note just what, you discover, and then you just follow a different path as you make a new discovery.
Exactly.
So, also, were those Transformers Autobots or Decepticons?
All right, moving on. In 1835.
You knew I was going to do it.
You're more than meets the eye, Chris. In 1835, we have Charles Babbage creating his mechanical calculator.
And of course, you could argue in a way that the abacus was a type of mechanical calculator, although you had to move the beads by hand, so I would say that's a manual calculator.
Yeah, yeah. We're being a little more technical than that.
Yeah.
And of course, Babbage made many, many contributions that would later become extremely important in computer science.
Oh, definitely, definitely.
And then 1837?
Samuel Morse.
And the telegraph.
Yeah, actually, this is one of those devices that the electromagnet played a huge part in.
Right. So Samuel Morse came up with this idea. Actually, the idea had been booted around by a few different people, but Morse was one of the folks who was able to actually put it to use and get it to work properly. The idea was that you would be able to create an electric current with one device, send that electric current through a wire so that it would activate a second device and you would get some sort of mechanical action out of it. That was just the very basics. So you essentially think of it like if you flip a switch, it would send an electric current through a wire to another switch, which would then trip.
Mm-hmm.
That's kind of the basis for this. Well, that would give you the very basics of being able to communicate with someone on the other end. Now, granted, there were some limitations, of course. One was that you could only really communicate through clicks, and two, you could only communicate one way at a time. You couldn't have two-way communication simultaneously.
Yeah, but that is also a good point, because Samuel Morse came up with the idea for Morse code, probably because you needed some way to send messages from one side to the other.
Yep,
so.
Yep. And then and a few years after he had developed this, there was the infamous Morse code message sent from D.C. to Baltimore.
Mm-hmm.
What hath God wrought?
Yes.
Yep. Morse code. No, mm-hmm. wait, that was Samuel. Mm-hmm. At any rate, so again, now that revolutionized communication because, yes. of course, up to that point, the way that we communicated was sending
a piece of paper with right. a messenger from one place to another.
Right. Either on train or on horseback, Pony Express type stuff. Yeah. I mean, it was slow to communicate between cities or between countries. Definitely. It was very slow.
Yeah.
And, but the invention of the telegraph completely revolutionized communication. Mm-hmm. Now, I got a few that we're just going to kind of jump on. First of all, one of the most important inventions of all time, created in 1841 mm-hmm. by Samuel Slocum, the stapler.
Yes. Please don't touch mine.
Milton will be very pleased.
Yes, indeed.
I was told I could listen to my music at a reasonable volume between the hours of 10 and 11. Then we've got around 1845.
Right, around 1845 to 1860 is when subways actually first became practical and launched in London.
Yep. The underground.
And now it's pretty popular all over the world and in many major cities.
Yep.
That really, I think, helped solidify the urban area, being able to spread people out and still get them in a form of mass transit that would enable people to move a little bit more quickly without having to rely on horseback or foot mm-hmm. because we don't have something yet that we're going to talk about in a minute.
In 1852, we had the gyroscope.
Yes.
Invented by Jean-Bernard Léon Foucault. I have no idea if I said
Forvo.com is what I'm saying to you.
All right. Well,
very useful.
See, Chris, here's a little hint.
Yeah.
Your tips are a lot more useful before we go into the studio than while we're in the studio.
Well, let me point out that it didn't really help my pronunciation, even though I did listen to it beforehand. Okay.
All right. Well, at any rate.
The gyroscope, extremely important in navigation, space travel.
Yep. Accelerometers, things like that.
Yep.
I mean, gyroscopes, space travel in particular, mm-hmm. it was extremely important. I mean, gyroscopes and gimbals together were some of the, they seem like they're pretty basic to us now, but really play an integral role in those technologies. So while it seems like, you might look at a gyroscope as like, especially the ones that you see in like toy stores or hobby stores, like it's a little kid's toy. No, it's very important.
Yeah. No, I don't shop at gimbals. Maybe
1858. Now we have Jean Lenoir. That one I knew I could say. So Jean Lenoir invented, apparently not, since it pre-existed by 40 years, according to you.
Well, from what I understand, this is the first successful gas-powered engine.
Internal combustion engine, yes.
Yes.
Now, we should kind of explain what the internal combustion engine means. So when you're talking about things like steam-powered or even coal-powered engines from before, you generally were heating up an element really, really high and then using the pressure from, say, the steam, like steam mm-hmm. locomotives, mm-hmm. the steam to power pistons. But you had a chamber where all the combustion took place, and then the steam was then transported to wherever it needed to go to push pistons to make things move. Internal combustion has the combustion take place within a cylinder where the piston actually is. So that's the internal part. Because people say, well, what was it? Were there external combustion engines before that? Kind of, in that the combustion didn't take place within the cylinder. And in this case, the cylinders contained a mixture of air and gas from coal, and then a spark from a little electrode, a spark plug essentially, would ignite the gas, and that would cause the gas to expand very quickly, pushing a piston, which generated the power you needed to move things.
Yes, and in case you're wondering, the difference between Joseph Nicéphore Niépce and his brother Claude, their system was a little different. It did use pistons, but what they were using for fuel was their machine, by the way, was called the pyrolophore.
Why did you even try?
I don't know. But he used lycopodium powder as fuel.
I was going to guess.
And he theoretically powered a boat with it. But Britannica said he claimed to have. So I guess we don't know for sure.
All right. Well,
but they refined it. Other people refined it. Nicholas Otto in 1878, made it a little better. And that's when people really, really took off when they had an opportunity to do that.
Sure. So moving ahead, 1862, man-made plastic, thanks to Alexander Parker's. Parks, rather. Mm-hmm. And then 1869, we had ball bearings.
Yes.
You wanted to add that to the list.
I did want to add that to the list.
I mean, they are very important.
Things? Yes, they're extremely important. And it's the kind of thing where I think previously to that, they hadn't been able to machine them fine enough to make them available in so many different things. And, you know, I know it had a lot to do to improve the a lot of industry because they were able to make different kinds of machinery on different scales with the advent of the ball bearing. So it's a small thing, and if you have a lot of them on the floor, they will make you fall.
I was just about to say, but it plays a pivotal role in many early comedies.
Yes, it does. But, you know, it's the kind of thing that it shows up and you go, huh, yeah, well, it does. Little things do make a difference sometimes.
All right, 1876, this is a big one. The telephone.
Ah, yes.
Alexander Graham Bell.
Mm-hmm.
Now, this was, of course, this is, you know, the next evolution for the whole telegraph technology. Bell at the time was working on a harmonic telegraph, the idea being that you would be able to have multiple lines of communication going over the same, through the same medium.
Yes, so that's sort of to solve the earlier problem you mentioned of only being able to send one communication in one direction at one time.
Right, exactly. But in secret, more or less, not in secret is probably too strong a term, but he was working on this idea of being able to transmit voice over an electrical line. So you would speak into a device. The device would convert the sound waves into electricity. The electricity would travel over a line to another device, which would decode the electrical signals and then play them back as sound.
Mm-hmm.
Using various membranes.
Yes, he was actually granted a patent for, and I quote, the method of an apparatus for transmitting vocal or other sounds telegraphically by causing electrical undulations similar in form to the vibrations of the air accompanying the said vocal or other sounds.
That's what you said.
Yeah.
And, of course, his
it's a fancy way of saying it.
The first sentence broadcast over telephone, or a what would become the telephone, was, of course,
can you pick up some milk?
No, it was, Mr. Watson, come here. I want to see you. The second sentence was, I would like cheese, pepperoni, anchovies, and extra crispy crust.
Watson, Thomas Watson, was a big part of the success of the telephone because his help was really key to getting Bell's telephone together. He apparently was really good working with the different parts of the mechanical stuff, where Bell, less so.
Yeah, he apparently was more of the theoretical and like the electrical engineering behind it. But also we should point out that Watson was not Sherlock Holmes's assistant.
Not that Watson.
No, that would be John Watson would be the other one.
All right. 1877,
the phonograph, Thomas Edison.
Yes.
He's going to pop up again in a second.
Those are those big, at that time, the big vinyl plastic things.
This one, at this point.
Predated CDs?
This one actually predated vinyl. This one was on aluminum. This was a cylindrical phonograph.
One was still the cylinders.
So, yeah, this was before even they were using wax. But it was one of the earliest examples of the technology.
Okay.
So I put it down there. And also moving pictures were first invented then,
mm-hmm.
which is not that you don't take – it's not that you take a picture down from the wall and then go, ooh, and move it around.
I was going to say I didn't know Rush was still around back then.
We're talking about movies, you know, like animation, that sort of thing.
I love that album.
And then 1879, we get back to Edison.
Yes.
With the light bulb.
The light bulb.
Very important.
Yeah, it's one of those things where I, you know, otherwise you wouldn't have a way to depict it when somebody has an idea.
Right. Yeah, we would all be without ideas for the rest of, you know, it's amazing. Nothing would have happened. No, okay, so a light bulb is a very simple idea. The idea here is that you use electricity to heat up some sort of element so that it gives off light.
Yep, very thin filament of metal.
Right, and some of the earliest ones were platinum. And Edison found that he could make the light bulbs last longer if he encased the filament in a vacuumed sealed tube,
mm-hmm.
which in this case was the light bulb. bulb, the glass. And he actually did glass blowing himself, and he would form the light bulbs and put it all together. And the first one he had, I think it lasted maybe like 4 hours. And then he was able to make some improvements, and gradually the lifetime of the light bulb began to get to a point where it was actually a useful thing. And this really did revolutionize the world. I mean, you think about it, the world was dark before the light bulb. I mean, when night came, you had candles and fireplaces, and that was about it.
Yes. So, we need to move on. I was just looking at the time. We need to move on.
All right, well, let's be faster then.
1885, Carl Benz.
Yep. He was he's credited with creating the first automobile with an internal combustion engine that was a practical vehicle. I mean, there had been some vehicles that used internal combustion engines to propel themselves. Gosh, it's been a long day before that, but his was the first really practical one. Also, the year when the safety bicycle was invented.
Yes, there had been all kinds of bone shakers and velocipedes and
unsafety bicycles.
Yeah, unsafety bicycles. You know, those ones with the giant front wheel and the tiny back wheel that you see. In 1885, the Rover Safety was released, designed by John Kemp Stanley, and it, you know, basically equalized the size of the wheels and introduced some other revisions to the design. And people, a few years later, when pneumatic tires came out, we're going to get to 1888 in a minute, but that really made a difference because then they weren't so painful to ride.
Right.
So
it reminds me of a joke, but it's dirty, so I have to skip it.
1887.
Radar, Heinrich Hertz.
Well, then he should take never mind.
You're going to be like that with the Avengers, too. Are you Thor? Yes, it hurts. 1888, we get back to our buddy Nikola Tesla.
Oh, yes.
This is when his AC motor and transformer invention starts to take off. Now, Tesla, of course, was a contemporary and sometimes antagonist, kind of, to Edison. Actually, I would say Edison was more the antagonist.
Didn't get along, let's say
Edison
that.
Edison did everything in his power to make Tesla look bad, and even though, and probably because of the fact that Tesla's approach was the superior. Edison was backing direct current, which was great, except for the fact that you needed a generator every 2 miles if you wanted to be able to transmit it over distance.
Yeah.
Whereas Tesla's alternating current, where the current would move one way and then move another way and then cycle through those different ways like 60 times a second, his variation would allow you to transmit electricity over huge distances without losing power, which is why Tesla's method won out in the long run.
Yes, in the late 1860s, Graham had introduced a way of generating power that basically helped people warm up to the idea of using electricity. But his were DC only dynamos, and it was in 1888 when Tesla's version for alternating current became available that people, you know, really helped it make a difference, because you could send power over longer distances with AC, so it made it more useful.
Right, and then years later he would be played by David Bowie.
Okay, then, shall we go to your next one?
Yes, 1898, one of the most important patents to ever be patented. 1898.
They patented the patent?
Was the year. No. The 1898 was the year that Edwin Prescott patented the roller coaster. Rock on, Edwin.
I bet it works better with ball bearings.
In 1901, we had the transatlantic radio. Thank you, Marconi.
Yes.
And sorry, Tesla. Marconi also was a contemporary and sometimes antagonist to Tesla, as it turns out, though he probably wasn't as aware of it. 1903, we have the motor-powered airplane. Do you remember who it was that had that infamous flight at Kitty Hawk? You should.
Well, considering it's my home state.
Yes. that's right.
That would be the – yes, that is right.
Yes, the Wright brothers, Orville and Redenbacher. No, wait, I'm sorry.
Wilbur.
Orville and Wilbur. Sorry, I had a little popcorn on the brain there. Yes, they had their famous flight in the first flight in 1903, where Orville piloted it the first time about 20 feet above the ground. And it lasted all of 12 seconds, but it covered about 120 feet, so it went a pretty good distance.
Yes, it did.
And then they made three more flights with Wilbur piloting the record flight, which lasted 1 second shy of a minute, 59 seconds, went 852 feet.
It can go a lot faster and a lot farther now.
But of course, yes, airplanes revolutionized travel. Moving on.
Splitting the atom in 1919, Lord Rutherford.
Yeah, he had a very fine, fine knife.
Yeah, I'm sure.
1927, television. All right, now this is one of technology's great controversies.
Yes.
Who invented television? Well, if you look at patents, you're going to see Philo T. Farnsworth. And in fact, he did successfully demonstrate television working through using an electron scanning tube. But a Russian, Vladimir Zvorkin, managed to first patented back in the 20s.
Yep. This is one of the situations 20s. Where, sorry.
No, go ahead.
This is one of the situations where both men were working on it independently at
right.
the same time. So they both, you know, really have a legitimate claim. Now, who's first?
Yeah, Vlad.
Vlad.
Most people think Vlad got a little ahead of Philo. But Vlad's invention never, or it didn't work. He couldn't get it to work before Philo got his to work.
Mm-hmm.
So even though Vlad may have come up with the idea first, and I stress may because the truth is still so murky, Philo was the one who got it to work, and that's what kind of counted in the eyes of history, really. So we credit Philo as the inventor of television.
Mm-hmm.
And the first television picture was transmitted on September 7th, 1927.
Yes.
Moving over to 1939.
Yep. Nuclear fission.
Yeah, that's splitting
yes.
atoms
yes.
so that you can get energy from them. Now, there are two mm-hmm. different ways you can get energy from by splitting atoms. One is a very controlled method, which mm-hmm. would be the way that we create nuclear power plants. Nuclear
yes.
power plants still exist on fission. They're splitting these in order to generate heat, which mm-hmm. then creates usually steam to create power. The other way is an uncontrolled release of energy, which mm-hmm. we also call a bomb.
Yes.
Which, tragically, we've also used atoms to do.
Yes, yes. But this Otto Hahn and Fritz Strassmann in Germany finally proved that you could transuranic elements are actual pieces of the are radioisotopes of barium, lanthanum, and other elements, according to Britannica.
Yeah, and there were a lot of...
So they could actually prove for a fact that you could split or create fission.
And there were lots of really famous names that were connected to this, because, of course, this is also during World War II, and you have both the Germans and the Americans and other countries as well working feverishly to try and master the power of the atom in order to put it to use in the war.
Mm-hmm.
So we had everyone from like Niels Bohr and Robert Oppenheimer, like famous names, where all very much focused on nuclear fission at the time.
Mm-hmm. I would ask to point out too really quickly that keep in mind that this is after 1928, and I'll tell you why that's important at the end of the podcast.
Oh, all right.
Then in 1942, ENIAC, the first electronic computer.
Yep, yep. We talked about that in the history of computers. 1947, we've talked about this before. Bell Labs creates the transistor.
Yep, yep. We've talked about a lot of these things toward the end of the 20th century, so we're going to kind of hop forward.
Jump over them.
1957, the thing that went beep.
Sputnik. Sputnik, of course, the first man-made satellite launched into orbit, launched by the USSR,
mm-hmm.
Completely sent America into a tizzy, because if the Russians could launch a satellite into space, they could also launch a missile at the United States, or so was the thinking at the time.
Yep.
And it didn't do much other than beep, but it was the first of many satellites, and of course that has truly revolutionized technology.
Speaking of those satellites, in 1964, SysCom 3 was the first geostationary satellite.
Yep.
See, I can't even look up, you know, pronounce the words that I don't know how to look up.
Thank you,
didn't
Mr.
need to look up.
Thank you, Mr. Clark.
Yes, but that's thank you to Arthur C. Clarke, the famous writer and science dude.
Yep. So in 1973, actually April 3rd, 1973, we can nail this down to the day. The first cell phone was used by Martin Cooper, who mm-hmm. used it to call a competitor from across the street and wave and say, "Nanny, nanny, boo, boo, we have a portable
working
phone."
Working phone. 1975, the home computer.
Yeah, that's when we first start seeing computers actually marketed for home use. And then in the 1980s, we see the development of the internet. The internet kind of evolved over time, so it's hard to, you can't really nail it down to a single year, because again, it's...
It predated the 80s, of course, as the ARPANET.
If you talk about ARPANET being the grandfather, sure.
But that wasn't when people, the general public, was using the service.
And you could argue that ARPANET was a single network. In which case it would not be an internet, because an internet is an interconnected series of networks. So ARPANET would just be one network. You would have to add a second network before you could call it an internet.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But that's being a little picky. 1983, compact discs. 1990, Tim Berners-Lee. He creates the World Wide Web, which is one of the most important tools, I think, in the last century.
Yep.
It's how a lot of us manage to get information, stay in touch with each other, everything from social networking to researching recipes to getting a job. I mean, it's really become something we heavily depend upon. And you know what he wrote the program on?
What's that?
He used a Next computer. Just thought you'd think that was kind of cool.
Yes, I do think that's kind of cool.
And he used a Next computer.
Yeah, we should do a podcast on that.
On the Next?
Yeah.
Sure.
And or maybe other computer platforms that didn't survive.
You know, we can do that one next.
1995, DVDs.
Yep.
The digital versatile disc. And then there's all kinds of other discs that have followed since then, too.
And we could go on. I mean, there are obviously dozens and dozens of other technologies that we could talk about, but that
Blu-ray
was
Blu-ray and HD and
MP3 players.
And,
I mean, lots of the developments are so fast now that it's hard to even keep a track on. I mean, we didn't talk about VHS. We didn't talk about cassettes. We didn't talk about magnetic tape at all, really, or solid state drives, anything like that. But
yeah.
I mean, when you get down to it, there's way too much to cover in 200 years. We wanted to hit the really, really big points.
And there are tons and tons of others that deserve mention. So, please feel free to let us know if we missed one of your favorites. But as I said before, you have to tell us one other thing, too. 1928, everything after 1928 that we mentioned, Otto Frederick Rohwedder invented the bread slicing machine. So everything after 1928, you have to tell us which is the best thing since sliced bread.
Roller coaster. Okay, well, that wraps up our 200th episode. And that's what happens
roller
when we
coasters
do
lots before sliced
and,
bread.
I know. That's what happens when we do lots and lots and lots of research. We go way over time.
You start finding fun stuff and then you investigate it.
In my defense, the 100th episode also went over time.
Yes, it did.
So if you guys have any questions or suggestions for podcast topics, or you just want to, say hello, you can email us. Our address is techstuff@howstuffworks.com. Chris and I will talk to you again, probably 200 more times, really soon.
If you're a Tech Stuff fan, be sure to check us out on Twitter. TechStuffHSW is our handle, and you can also find us on Facebook at facebook.com/TechStuffHSW.
For more on this and thousands of other topics, visit HowStuffWorks.com. And be sure to check out the new TechStuff blog, now on the HowStuffWorks homepage. Brought to you by the reinvented 2012 Camry. It's ready. Are you?
I'm Katya Adler, host of The Global Story. Over the last 25 years, I've covered conflicts in the Middle East, political and economic crises in Europe, drug cartels in Mexico. Now I'm covering the stories behind the news all over the world in conversation with those who break it. Join me Monday to Friday to find out what's happening, why, and what it all means. Follow The Global Story from the BBC wherever you listen to podcasts.
It's brand new season 2. I'm Marissa Thalberg.
And I'm Stephen Wolf Bedatum. And we're excited to be back having bigger, bolder, and always real conversations.
Straight from the C-suite front lines of marketing, media, and more.
We have great friends joining from people you may know, like Wilmer Valderrama and Bobby Burke.
And people you'll want to know. So grab a coffee or, hey, even an Aperol Spritz and come join us on America's number one podcast network, iHeart.
Listen to Brand New on the iHeart Radio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Johnny B. Goode, the host of the podcast Creating a Con, the story of BitCon. This podcast dives deep into the story of Ray Trapani and his company, CentraTech. I'll explore how 320-somethings built a company out of lies, deceit, and greed.
I've been saying since a very young age that I was going to be a millionaire. If someone's like, oh, what's your best way of making money? I'm like, oh, we should start some sort of scheme.
Listen to Creating a Con, the story of Bitcoin, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Every family has an origin story, one passed down through the generations. Mine happens to be a mystery involving my great-great-grandmother left behind in Sicily. I'm Joe Piazza, and my new podcast will transport you to the gorgeous island of Sicily as I trace my roots back through a whodunit for the ages. Listen to The Sicilian Inheritance on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.